Blog Talk Radio.
Here comes the big bad wolf.
Down. Here we go, another exciting week, another exciting show on the Christo Radio Show. So tired of that name. We got to get a better name, people. I'm not getting any submissions. No one's giving me any suggestions whatsoever. I guess everyone's happy with it being called the Christo Radio Show. Anyway, got a great show today. But before we get into that, you know, we do this little bit in the beginning here where we talk about what's fresh and tasty and some grilling tips and things like that. So right now what's fresh and tasty in the New York area is beet greens. One of my favorite things is beet greens. I love beet greens as a kid. Better than spinach. I don't know. They're just awesome. If you've never had beet greens, you need to just get out there and get some beet greens. The beets themselves aren't fully developed yet. They're probably just little tiny little ping pong ball sizes at this point. They might be a little bit bigger than that. And if you want to pick those, if you have a garden, they're super sweet when they're that small. But beet greens, people, of course you've got your pole beans and string beans and sweet peas and all that stuff. That's all out there right now too. And lettuce is still happening. Radishes are happening. But I say get some beet greens. And grilling tips. Got some grilling tips for you. I never have any grilling tips, but I got some grilling tips now. So one of the number one grilling tips I'm going to give you is how to figure out the heat, how to tell how hot your grill is without using a thermometer. You can use one of those instant read thermometers where you just point it right at it. It's a digital thing, and it'll tell you how hot it is on the surface. But you can do it with your hands. You can just sort of hover your hand over it a little bit, and if you can keep your hand over there for, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds like that, then your grill's probably in the 200 to 300 degree range. 4 seconds, you're moving up to 350. 3 seconds, 350 to 375. 2 seconds, 375 over 400 degrees. It's hot. If you can just barely get it on there, you know, you're up in the 400 or 500. I have a Charbroil True Infrared grill, and mine has little thermometers on the outside, and it says it gets up to 700. I question that. I would like to get an accurate read on that, but it's pretty darn hot. I'd say it's at least 500. And I've got another grill tip for you. My colleague and buddy Chris Grove, a Charbroil All-Star, has a book out for the Kamado grill, or Kamado, or Kamado, or it's Komodo Dragon, however you say that word, Komodo Smoker and Grill. He's got a great book out full of tips for both the professional, the novice, young and old alike. So check out his book. It's on Amazon. You can find it, the Komodo Smoker Grill Cookbook. And I guess I'm running out of tips. We've got a really exciting guest today. He's a little bit of a heavy hitter in my book. I watch him a lot. I see him around on Facebook. I've seen his travels. He gets around. He's coast to coast constantly. I know he's just been doing a few events lately. He's got a consulting business for restaurants. He's got a pasta company. Well, without much further ado, let me introduce Matt Dillon. Hey, Matt.
Hey there. How you doing today?
Hey, how's it going? I know you're calling in from California. A little early for you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it is early. I'm usually sleeping late, you know, up late, night owl. So,
I know you had some events yesterday even, didn't you? You had a young cooking crew or young something or other?
Well, we did Eater. I don't know, most people who are in the food industry know about Eater. and they had the what they call the Young Guns event. And, basically, they nominated, or readers nominated, who they thought the newest young chefs were to look out for, and they flew them into L.A., and we had a giant event where you get to taste all their food and drink and enjoy their company and stuff. So it's really nice.
That is very exciting. You've been in the restaurant business over 30 years. As young as you are, you have an enormous amount of experience. You've worked with some of the greats, and you just never looked back. You've been just at it, right? You've owned restaurants.
Yeah, I've owned a number of restaurants. I was fortunate to start young enough. I know a lot of people in this country, for some reason, end up starting late. I think it's not quite like Europe where, people are starting, 11, 12, 13 in the restaurant industry. I started in my early teens, during high school and stuff. But I was always around food when I was even young. We used to have a giant garden growing everything, bitter melons, eggplant, zucchini, okra, corn, tomatoes, onions, garlic, you name it. And then we had, over 100 rabbits, about 15, 20 chickens. And so it's quite interesting.
Well, you touched on something right there. You have a kind of a diverse ethnic background when you mentioned the bitter melon.
Yeah, definitely. I'm half Indian from India and Italian. So
That's culinary hot pot. That's kind of cool. I'm sure meals around your house were really exciting growing up.
Definitely. I had my mom's side. Vader's talking to me. Can you hear him? I love when my phone talks through. My mother's side, they came through Ellis Island and everything, and we're like on the board, which is kind of interesting. When I go to New York every once in a while, I go out and do that trip, and it's interesting to see your family name on the wall there. And then they migrated up to the UP, Marquette, Ishpeming area. And my dad came to the States in the early 50s from India and went to Kansas University, got a mechanical engineering degree. Great-grandfather was a minister of agriculture for India. So big food-related
cool.
Family, So.
That is pretty cool. I try to enjoy bitter melon. It is definitely an acquired taste. I've had it cooking it myself. I've had it prepared by people who know how to make it really well. There's just something I just can't get around it. Also persimmon. So I guess maybe it's that tight, that kind of, there's something there that causes, what is that? When it makes your mouth feel dry or something. Persimmons do that to me. And bitter melon does the same thing.
Persimmons,
that's interesting.
Yeah, persimmons,
okay. They pucker me up. I don't know why. It's like, it's not the same as what lemons do.
It's almost, you're getting like a tannin, like from wine, tannin.
It's like very much like a tannin thing, but really concentrated. And persimmons and bitter melon, they're the same thing. And banana blossoms, I've tried those.
Oh.
They do the same thing.
Yeah, banana blossoms, I enjoy them. Persimmons, we were goofing around. About the last 2 years, I've been goofing around with persimmons, and I came out with persimmon butter that I make, which is really great on, like, squaw bread and stuff like that I make fresh at home.
Well, that's the odd part. I can eat persimmons in things. I made a persimmon flan with candy cap mushrooms. It was really good. I just can't eat the persimmon.
Yeah, I don't eat them generally raw myself either. It is definitely an acquired taste. My dad and the rest of the family loves to eat them. They eat mangoes like they're going out of style. And mangoes, the same thing for me, where I like it in certain things, but I don't really care for it by itself.
Well, mangoes are a part of the nightshade family. They're like, they're in there with tomatoes and stuff like that. So people that have a sensitivity to that sort of a thing mangoes are actually more stronger with that nightshade factor than tomatoes are, for example. I read about that. Yeah.
That's a new one I just learned.
Yeah, you never know about that nightshade stuff, but it's out there.
Cool. I've got some really nice, I've got micro tomato growing right now in my garden. Stays the size of about a softball, the whole bush, and that's it. Doesn't get all...
Really?
And it does a little tiny, I would say they're like small gumball size, not the big ones, the little tiny ones you used to get when you were a kid.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Then I brought in German pink, they call it. I've never experimented with those. I've got that in this year. I've got the rhubarb in. I've got, purple asparagus, green asparagus, red okra, green okra, crooknecks going right now. I've got quite a few different heirloom tomatoes. I've got my strawberries are getting ready to hit here pretty quick. But we got I grow them in baskets, so I hang them.
Nice.
And then grow them out of baskets.
How about the rest of your garden? How big is that area?
Well, right now I've got it's a 20 by 25 by 15 greenhouse garden. So.
Oh, greenhouse. Nice.
Yeah, that's the one in Southern California. So I've got a few different houses. That's the one I'm running right now because I'm spending most of my time here in New York, my place in Soho. So.
Yeah, you were just here in New York a couple weeks ago, right? Maybe less than that. A few days ago, actually.
Just there, yeah, last week I flew back to the West Coast on Monday. So I've been out there so much that I ended up picking up an apartment with a friend who does the same thing. He goes back and forth from the West to the East. And we just split the place. It's a lot cheaper than renting hotels and a lot more convenient than couch surfing with friends, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we're out your welcome that way. I'm sure.
Exactly. I'm a pretty good house guest when I come over, though. I take care of the place. I'm not one of those ones that just has my stuff strewn all over the place. And
just come in and dump the suitcase right out and go, I know it's in here somewhere.
Exactly. Look at the wreck of the Hesperus, is what my grandmother used to say all the time. So, what the hell is this Hesperus I keep hearing about?
Well, my mom is big on that fish and family go bad after 3 days, and every time I go out to New Mexico to visit, she has no qualms in reminding me of that little idiom. It's like, thanks, Mom. I thought you'd be happy to see me.
Yeah, my family's kind of the same thing. You know, I lived in Vail, Colorado, straight for almost 15 years, full time, and still have property out there in the house. And I'd come back to California, and my dad would say, hey, I don't know if you can say it on the radio, but, hey, hiney holes, you know, I was cleaning up that way. That's the first thing to come out of his mouth, not, hey, how you doing, you know?
That's pretty funny.
It's just that family love for you, you know?
There you go. So what do you got going on right now? What's your week looking like this week? You're about the busiest guy I know.
Well, this week right now, I'm just trying to shore up. We're trying to get the website, my e-commerce site done for the pasta company, Fattoria Del Vicario. So I think I shared this with you once before. I have a pasta company out of Abruzzo, Italy, which is basically, when we talk about pasta in Abruzzo, you're talking basically what Napa or the Left Bank is to wine. Abruzzo is to pasta, the best semolina wheat and everything grows in Abruzzo, Italy. But it has to do with terroir, the land itself, and the cool breezes to come off the Adriatic coast provide the perfect place to grow the best pasta wheat you can do. So
no, we did talk about that, and it's non-GMO as well.
Yeah, well, it's non-GMO. I got what they call DOP certification when the government of Italy comes in And they check the property and make sure you're within the standards to get that designation and that you're producing everything on property and all that. So this Fattoria Del Vicario is our higher-end line, and we sun-dry everything. We're pressing out the pasta shapes with 16th-century bronze dyes. And it's all single farm wheat, so we're not taking from our co-op like Rusticella de Abruzzo, which is our other line. The Rusticella line we take from other growers in our same area that are part of the co-op, and then we pool together, kind of like Ocean Spray Wood, you know, where it's or the Florida, you know, Growers Association. So that's the difference between the two lines. Now,
that sounds so cool. When you said it's all sun-dried and everything, I suddenly got this very romantic image of old Italian ladies making the little orchiettes by hand with the little kerchiefs on their head.
It's kind of like that. not so much the old ladies anymore, but, you know. It's interesting. It produces such a higher quality product. I mean, I will sit there and claim to fame is I'll take it against anyone's fresh pasta and I'll slaughter them 9 out of 10 times. So the problem with most fresh pasta is that when they're doing it in a restaurant or at home, they're not drying it quite enough. So it needs to be dried out for a certain amount of time to create the correct, what they call tooth feel or mouth feel, you know? So, that's the issue you get with most restaurants. So with the sun drying, it's done at a slow pace instead of like force drying with machines and stuff. So you get a high quality product. Like my egg pastas are all nested. So they look like little bird's nests when we ship them out. So you can take a nest, and like one of my restaurants use them. You take a nest in, you drop it in your water, and it comes back in, you know, 4 or 5 minutes, you know, and it's ready to serve. And that's, you know, that's pretty amazing stuff where you can't even tell that it was dried, you know.
No, and I think people need to understand that better, because there's some listeners out there that probably make their own pasta and do this sort of thing. I know I make my own pasta, and I do let it sit there and dry just a little bit. I may not be letting it dry long enough. But I think that's what people don't really get is that air drying process. That does add enormously to the texture and quality of the pasta. If you just take the raw dough right after you roll it out and cut it up and drop it in the water, it's good, but it's not. It can tend to be mushy, right? Is that what you mean? Is that usually what happens?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. You're not going to get a mouthfeel. You're just going to get this mush flavor. You got to remember you're using what they call 00. Ultra fine ground flour, so there's not any texture there, and then you add your egg, and sometimes you fortify with a little extra egg yolk, and that gives it almost that chew to it, you know, that flexibility, but it needs to dry to set up. So,
you just mentioned the flour, the 00. That's a super fine. Oftentimes you see that people are using the semolina flour, which is it's a little more of a harder wheat, right?
Well, it's a hard wheat. It's a coarser grind also. And that's also giving it texture. That's the reason they would do that. See, we do, like our pastas, we do whole wheat. We do spring wheat, which is a softer wheat. We do a winter wheat, which we call the prima grano, which is the hard wheat. That's probably by far my favorite texture. We do squid ink, we do saffron, we do farro, we do corn and rice, you know, so we've got gluten-free pastas also. But being non-GMO, our wheat pastas are very different, not only appearance, flavor, and texture than anything you get here in the States. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, get some Barilla off the shelf and this and that. Well, that's, that's made, it used to be made in New Jersey. Now it's made up in, I think, Syracuse or Rochester, you know, and that's American wheat. That's not made here. So it's a totally different product, you know.
Now, where can people get your pastas? Are they available here for people to purchase, Whole Foods or any specialty market shops or online?
Whole Foods has got my pasta, the Brooklyn Cheese Shop, Dean and DeLuca selling it, HEB grocery stores, which is also Central Market, carries it. We're nationwide. But we're in the more higher-end stores, Claro's Markets, Cortina's Markets.
Nice. And what's the name of it again? Trattoria?
Fattoria Del Vicoria. It's F-A-T-T-O-R-I-A, second word, D-E-L, last name, Vicario, V-I-C-A-R-I-O.
Nice.
And then we also have what the other is called Rusticella, R-U-S-T-I-C-H-E-L-L-A, De Abruzzo, A-B-R-U-Z-Z-O. And it's easy. You find our pastas. We come in the brown craft paper bag with the brass rivets and the little glass window and then the hand stamped what the shape is. So if you can't miss it. No one packages like us. We do the old school packaging.
Nice. Now, you know, people out there that are listening, you know, you're going to pay a couple bucks extra for this, but it's completely worth it. You know, it's not, you know, it's not the same as getting, like Matt's saying, the Barilla pasta off the shelf or the Ronzoni. This is a whole other thing. It's a whole other flavor. You're going to taste the difference. You're going to notice the difference in the texture. People need to get out there and try some of this stuff so they can see, you know, what it's all about. They're not going to be disappointed.
It's well worth the price. And you know what? There's a lot of care behind it. I mean, you want to call it artisanal or, you know, it's night and day difference. And, you know, people get it. And we're growing consistently in our sales in the States. We're not trying to be a big, huge, huge company. We just want to put out the best product we can put out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I know people look at pasta as an economy meal, you know, because it is, you know, one of the cheaper things you can get in the grocery store. But even when you're buying higher-end pastas like this, it's still good value for your money. It's not – if you imagined if you went out to an Italian restaurant, you're going to get that quality right there in your own home. So the value is still there for people. It's not – there's they're not sacrificing value. It's still an economy meal to – you know, if a box of pasta is $2.99 for, say, Ronzoni, and it's $4.99 or whatever for a better pasta, the value is still there. So,
yeah, most definitely. I think what the problem is that, you know, I've run into this. In the States, we're always worried about, you know, you want the Beamer, you want the Mercedes, you need the Birkin bag, you need the... you know, the Canali suits, you need the Prada shoes, this, that. But then we go out, and the most important thing that we do is food in our body, and we tend to stuff our bodies with the cheapest food possible out there, which is really bizarre to me. Put all this money into exterior facades, and then we feed ourselves with the cheapest stuff you can, you know, stuff in your body. It baffles me.
No, that's completely true. I mean, people don't mind spending $5 or $6 for a pint of craft beer or for a Starbucks coffee. But if you tell them that a dozen eggs is $5, they're organic, they're going to be like, what?
Exactly. It is. And, you know, the other thing, too, is the higher quality food that you eat, you know, the more satisfying it is, the less quantity you eat up also. That's my experience, you know. I'm not big into doing all this processed food. I've stepped away from it. I used to have really high cholesterol. I was at 289. I was on high blood pressure medication, all that stuff. Changed my diet, stopped eating boxed, canned stuff, and all this processed stuff that you get in the markets here. the fast food and all that, stay away from as much of it as possible. Bam started eating much, I should say, healthier food, and also my portion size went down because of the quality of the food. You didn't feel like you needed to stuff yourself with so much, you know?
No, that's exactly right. I tell people that all the time. When you're eating a nicer, richer food, you're feeling more satisfied. You don't have to gorge yourself.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a fact. If do you drink skim milk, you're going to drink a lot more skim milk than if you drank full-fat milk. And you're not going to be satisfied. You're seeing more and more studies of this stuff. You know, you look at other countries, you look at France and stuff like that, and there or Germany with the heavier foods and stuff, but they don't eat like these gluttonous portions we do, you know?
No, I think if listeners are out there paying attention a little bit, I think there's a real valuable lesson right here that needs to be brought out. Matt's a chef, and, you know, you have access to some of the highest quality food that's around. You could eat whatever you wanted anytime you want. And here, you've just explained that you've had to alter your diet. You were eating processed foods before. You were eating boxed things. So even professional chefs, even people who are around it all the time, it's easy to fall victim to that. It's easy. You know, it's convenience is what drives that sort of thing all the time. You know, and I don't think people really get it. That here you are, having to adjust your diet, which is...
Yeah, most definitely. You know, I by changing my diet and everything, I lost over 12 pounds. I'm completely off all the medications now. I'm much healthier. I don't have the stomach issues. I think the thing is, though, is we've got so caught up in our lives, you know, especially, you know, working behind the line or in the restaurant, you get done at 2-3 in the morning. What's the first thing you want to do? You don't want to really cook anymore. And I think we've gotten away from that, or people working, you know, a 9-to-5 or whatever, they get home, they're just burned out from work, and they don't want to cook anything. So what's the first thing they do? You know, they run into that line over at the fast food joint, or plop something in the microwave and you know, get that instant gratification of very unhealthy food. And then they wonder why they're sick, you know?
Right.
They're not
feeling
well,
all the extra,
overweight,
all the
and everything
all the extra
else.
Sodium, yep. Yeah, it's an interesting, vicious little cycle because, you know, like you said, you know, you get home, even if you've been cooking all day or working all day or doing whatever it is you're doing, you want that fast fix.
Yeah, definitely.
Hey, there's RoboDrum. We got about a minute and a half to go.
Well, you know what I'd say? Thank you for having me on the show. And to the listeners, I'd say, you know what? Eat the best you can eat, because it is by far the best medicine you're going to have in your life.
And you know what? That's a great, great, great point for people out there. It worked for you. You brought your cholesterol down. You lost weight. You're off the medication. I know it works for me. I had high blood pressure. I've adjusted it with diet. I don't have to take anything. Well, everybody, thanks again. Thanks again, Matt. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
I'm gonna go get some more. when you thought radio was safe. A new kind of radio is on its way. Food, music, and friends. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Coming in 2014.